This edition of The Stack was first broadcast on the 14th of November, 2015, on Monocle 24.
Once considered the defining beacon of cultural benchmarks, today's news magazines are a very different beast. During a time of great industry evolution, the best publications forge their own paths. So what is the role of the modern news magazine, and what changes might lurk on the horizon? That's today on The Stack. On today's show, we're heading to Belgium to hear from a Flemish magazine that's expanding its readership despite hitting newsstands just four times a year.
When we look at the magazine, the question is not what is everybody else doing and how can we add to that? The question is what is really happening?
And a little later in the show, we ask what is that elusive quality that makes the modern news magazine? I'll be joined by my studio guest, Benedict Pavio, to discuss the changing face of today's weeklies. All that coming up on The Stack. Monocle 24 is a dedicated print industry review and analysis show. Hello and welcome to The Stack with me, Tyler Brulé. I'm joined in the studio today by Benedict Pavio, UK correspondent for the French international news channel France 24 or France 24. We're going to spend some time today focusing on the news magazine, those most often weekly titles that have in the past come to define certain periods in history. We often look back to titles like Time or Life for confirmation that a particular event or person was significant enough to dominate their era. From JFK to Marilyn Monroe to O.J. Simpson and even Adolf Hitler, the faces of Time, Newsweek, and Life magazine have become eternal bookmarks in history. But is it a role that they still play today? Benedict, very good to see you, as ever. I would imagine fresh from somewhere, fresh-ish from somewhere.
From Switzerland, Geneva, and from Beaune, Burgundy, beautiful Burgundy, and the wonderful wines there.
Lovely time of year to be there as well.
And incredible weather, summer.
Yeah, well, I was in Zurich earlier in the week, absolutely outstanding. Those days also when you're sort of nestled between the mountains, a little bit foggy in the morning, and then by 11 o'clock, it's absolutely glorious.
Romantic.
And I was at Paradeplatz in front of one of my favorite transport hub newsstands. It's just interesting today that we're looking at sort of the notion of news weeklies. And, you know, here we've got, you know, surrounded, we've got, you know, old covers of Life, and we've got, you know, this week's edition of Time, Unlimited Energy for Everyone Forever, Fusion. It might actually work this time. You know, very much promoting a story by Lev Grossman. We have the future of farming on the cover of Newsweek. And it was just interesting when I was looking at the newsstand that, you know, these English language titles, even in an international city, I mean, you come from Geneva, in Zurich, they occupied one role. And then you see the German titles, you see the French, you're playing a very, they're in a slightly different game. They seem to be, you know, maybe not the sort of the same markers. Of course, you know, I'm sure there'll be Schmidt covers all over the place next week on the German titles for sure. Now, the Schmidt, Chancellor Schmidt era will, of course, mark a moment in time, but maybe in a slightly different way. There was a different type of drama. And I'm wondering, are we missing something as we see these titles, you know, before we went on air, we say they're somewhat dwindling. I mean, Time is great to carry around if you don't want to lug anything.
And very light, lighter and lighter.
And, you know, I'm sure they can't be thrilled either that it's also light on advertising as well. A couple of good brands. I mean, I'm
that's
sure.
That's good. Light on advertising.
But hard to finance yourself if you're light on advertising as
true.
Well. When
true.
You're not getting. Yeah, I mean, of course, many brands, of course, here do get a little bit of money from the public purse. But what do you think happens today? I mean, are you looking at a generation 15 years out, a decade out, where you're going to have to really sort of trawl around and say, this is what happened on November 17th, on December 24th, as opposed to there was something that said something in print?
I think there's a very interesting phenomenon. First, we should differentiate the Anglo-Saxon phenomenon and the French one. The British are very big readers of newspapers, so therefore on a daily basis. Mm. They're not huge consumers of weeklies. Exactly the reverse in France.
Right.
Much more, although Le Monde, Le Figaro, Libération, all in terrible financial trouble, by the way, all quite prestigious, with various complex histories, with subsidies from the state at various points in their lives, after the Second World War, wanting to promote free speech, freedom of thought, etc., of course, in France. really now there is a big phenomenon of reading weeklies. So whether it's L'Observateur, well, Le Nouvel Observateur, which is now called L'Obs. Right?
Yeah.
Don't think that's a very good move. Never mind.
Never mind.
Le Point, L'Express, magazines like that. And I think what's interesting, looking at both the French markets and the English one, let's take the Spectator magazine, for example, in Britain. I think it's really interesting to look at. Of course, it targets a very specific constituency, if you will, of readers. But they are really, I think, have upped their game in the last year because they send in an email form something called, I think it's Coffee House or Coffee Blend. And every evening, they really, with various links and articles, they invite you to read the topical things. And I think that is the dilemma, of course, with 24-hour news channels, of magazines and especially of newspapers, where they position themselves in the market. So I think, to answer your question, down the road, there will be hybrids where you've both got a physical, I personally love paper, but I also love the convenience of being anywhere with an iPad. Any other brands also accepted.
Sure.
And a phone and any kind of screen, you can tap into analysis that is hot-hoofed by various weeklies.
What would be the iconic marker, though? So I can watch France 24 and I can, there's a death of head of state or we're looking back at something. And of course, we go to the Pathé newsreels and all of these things. And so, of course, it's been marked in film or video. But at the same time, though, I always feel that we're still getting covers, you know, thrown up as well. What was on the news? What was on the kiosk, you know, that day, you know, in a great little corner in the Rive Gauche or likewise, you know, in Mitte in Berlin? Do we have the same type of presence if you're going to be a news site, Politico, in that sense? Is it going to be a screen grab from that moment in time or... Or, you know, because I also think we're even probably trying to unearth what was there that day. But anyway.
I think that there will always be a love for some sort of hard copy. I think that will always exist. I mean, when television existed, everybody thought, well, some people thought it would never work, et cetera, et cetera. So I think one's always predicting the demise of this. I think it will be that hybrid version. There is something. Paris Match is well known for its slogan of le choc des photos, le poids des mots, le choc des photos. The heavyweightness, in a sense, of words, or the importance of words, but the shock factor of the visuals of great imagery. So as the daughter of a French film director, brought up in editing suites, on film sets, very visually inputted, I'm also very big on the oral word. So I think, but we do need, one of the diseases we all have now is this twitching of phones, twitching of screens, constant checking for personal, professional. We're constantly connected.
Yeah.
And we forget to stand back, which Monocle does extremely well, looking at the very detail and then pulling back and having more of an overview, if you will, because otherwise we miss the forest for the trees.
Absolutely. I thought it was fascinating how you made the sort of the point about, you know, the French being, of course, they're consumers of newspapers, but, you know, they're much more into the weekly diet when it comes to the titles. And also, you mentioned also, you know, Paris Match also being, you know, part of that world as well. Then, you know, the Brits with their newspapers are a tradition of Sundays. And then, of course, we have to look at the biggest economy in Europe. The Germans have both. I mean, the Germans have a massive appetite for their newspapers, slightly, you know, more regionalized. I think some people would say you can't really claim a national daily. Maybe that belongs to Frankfurter Allgemeine. On a business side, maybe it belongs to Handel. Blood, but you know, you've got the strength, you know, on one side of Die Welt, you have, of course, Süddeutsche Zeitung out of Munich. But then you, of course, have Der Spiegel, and you have Stern, and you have Focus magazine. So, you know, they've got both. And it's kind of interesting to see that, you know, they're really behind that. Over the last few weeks, we've been talking about, you know, we're at the Frankfurt Book Fair. And it's one thing to sort of look what's happening with German publishing in general. Actually, quite good news if you're still on paper as well. We've seen sort of the slight decline, the downtick of tablet sales, Kindle sales, etc. Very interesting to see. And then the Germans are just sort of going for it. So I'm wondering, do you think there's also, you know, and this alliance comes and goes, is there sort of a Gallic Germanic sort of way of treating the media, print, and maybe a slightly different way? You know, in that sense, almost the UK sort of sits in the middle. And then you've got sort of the American way, which to me is still sort of, you know, it's very unilateral. It's got to be one thing or the other. It's like, you know, we all have to be 24-hour news, or we all have to be on social media, or we all have to be sort of only digital. Everyone seems to be looking for the one solution in the States. Whereas you're saying maybe the European way is we don't mind a few different hybrids and we're more at ease with it, maybe.
I think we're exploring. I mean, we're really living. I don't think many generations think of themselves in real time as being transitioning, but we are. We forget how recent, in a sense, the internet is. We also forget what a huge impact, mostly beneficial, it has had. I should point out that the biggest selling newspaper in France is actually regional, and the regional newspapers do very well, like West France, for example. But there is also another phenomenon that we highbrow news and current affairs journalists and presenters need to talk about. And there's, in the French market, it's been late, but certainly in the German market and certainly in the British market, it's the equivalent in the weekly form of tabloids and celebrity journalism and that kind of. France has come to it terribly late, but is catching up very fast because of the very strict privacy laws. So because you weren't allowed to publish paparazzi pictures, you didn't know about the illegitimate daughter of President Mitterrand until he was just about to come out of office, although the French taxpayer was paying for it and her security and her mother's for years. Right. Part of the whole French scene, if you want. But that whole celebrity-driven Hello Magazine type of phenomenon really exists, and I think is very much here to stay.
My guest today is Bénédicte Pavio from France 24. You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24. We're going away for a very short break. When we come back, staying on the side of the Atlantic, other side of the channel, we're heading to Belgium.
Kiosk Cafe has arrived in London. From the founders of Monocle comes a newsstand and coffee bar concept inspired by Europe's finest city street kiosks. There's a great selection of magazines and newspapers, of course, including print-on-demand titles from all around the world, making Kiosk Cafe in Paddington a real celebration of the best in print and paper. And there's more. With all-pressed coffee and travel essentials from some of Monocle's favorite brands available too, Kiosk Cafe is the perfect spot for business travelers and visitors to London, as well as print aficionados. Come and visit us and see for yourself. Kiosk Cafe is open for business now from 7 a.m. to 1900 daily at Norfolk Place, moments from Paddington Station. Kiosk Cafe, newsstand and coffee bar. We look forward to welcoming you.
You're back with The Stack here on Monocle 24 on a Saturday with me, Tyler Berlay. Now, the niche market for Flemish-speaking Belgian press is doing impressively well, and for good reason, by ensuring they always approach their content from their own unique perspective. Flemish magazines like Mondial Nieuws are attracting an expanding readership and contributing to the emerging, some would even say boisterous, voice that Flanders is creating for itself. Monocle's Alexander Stenbock-Vermoor spoke to Mondial's editor, Gijs Horris, about only being published four times a year and its mission to retain that elusive alternative quality.
When we look at the magazine, the question is not what is everybody else doing and how can we add to that? The question is what is really happening? We have the feeling that that it gives us space to come up with ideas that would not be very likely to be realized in the 24/7 cycle of online media. A magazine with a slow pace steps out of that maddening crowd and tries to present what should be news but doesn't make it to the news.
Mondial Nieuws is an alternative news magazine.
Well, the magazine, first of all, has a very clear focus on global issues. We don't do much of Belgian news, for instance, but we try to give people the information they need to understand the rest of the world or the globalized world we're living in. For instance, online, we had a full week of news stories about the Balkan route, people walking into Europe early this year, long before it became a news story, because we have people that approach it in a slower way and that knew it was growing. We knew it was coming long before it broke as a news story. And what we're doing online feeds back into the slower journalism of the magazine. So to have both media in the same house, I feel, is really enriching our production of journalism both ways. But certainly the perspective of a slow magazine is an added value even for the online media that we also make.
And do you think each issue of Mo is meant to be maybe a timeless piece which could be read at any time and is not specifically, as you say, connected to its specific moment where it has been published?
Well, timeless is a big word, I would say. What we try to do is we try to produce magazines that have a long staying power. If after a year you pick up the issue and you go through it, there's a lot in it that would be still relevant and that would still maybe surprise you if you read it. When we publish the next issue, will come out the first week of December, then that issue should not speak to what is happening at that moment. It should speak about the world we live in. Like, for instance, last year we did a big story about steel industry and globalization. It's an immensely important story, but it's nowhere to be read because there is no hook, there is no urgency. Once you bring the story, then we try to bring it in a way that people can still sense the urgency of it. It's still journalism. It still speaks to the same people. They want to be spoken to in a different tone. And that's, I think, what you can do with a good print magazine.
And do you think the fact of being a niche magazine or an alternative magazine is what makes printed press survive, the fact of being niche?
Yes, print needs a very clear mission, not trying to be everything for everybody. That's clear, especially magazines. The magazine is, I think, increasingly so for people, a very conscientious choice that they make. Most people that are magazine readers are quite savvy media users at this moment. So they add this, that, or a few magazines to their media mix, and they make quite clear choices. So I think what you should do as a media maker, a magazine maker, is to be very clear in where you stand, what you will bring, and stick to it. Don't follow the hype, because the hype is going left and right and up and down. Once you start following that as a magazine maker, you're dead. Because online, you can change very quickly, adapt very quickly to new trends and terms. People reading a magazine, even if they are the same readers as online, are much more conservative. They sort of make a contract with the magazine, and they want the magazine to stick to that contract. So change needs to be very tactful. You have to take your reader with you if you would want to change.
And how is the independent magazine scene looking in Belgium, and what is the future looking like for Mondial News?
I think that the need to understand the world is only growing. When we started the magazine early in 2000, it was still a matter of debate. Is international news, will it survive, or will the whole media collapse into parochial reporting? I never thought it would, and the past 10, 15 years have proven that people live in a globalized world. If they don't see it immediately, the world enters into our villages, in our cities, in our streets, in our lives. And so people are forced to understand what is going on. And either they're delivered to populist policies or policymakers, or there are alternative ways of understanding. And I think there is a clear and urgent need for understanding tendencies in the world. So in that sense, I think in terms of demand, I see no big problem. In terms of financing, everybody is always looking maybe 2 or 3 years ahead. The times that we could plan 10 years are long gone.
And that was Monocle's Alexander Stenbach. For more, they're in conversation with the editor-in-chief of Mondial News, Hikhorst. I'm still in the studio with Benedict Pavia. We were listening to that piece. One thing that, you know, that stood out actually was, well, I mean, maybe some Flemish people would say, you know, they're not a niche. But, you know, it's still a rather small constituency in the grand scheme of Europe. But it's amazing that you can have a title which has really carved out its patch, it sounds like. And just at a time when we think, okay, we're probably going to be a Europe of only English, French, Spanish, and German. It's amazing to see that here is a business which actually is able to bring the world from a Flemish perspective and really, you know, define and create an audience. You almost think, well, maybe I should be investing, when he was talking at the end about looking over that 3-year horizon, maybe I should be investing in a Catalan publisher right now.
Yes, I think he's very clear on what his mission is, what they're trying to accomplish. I think I agree that there is a need to understand this growing world, that we are in a globalized world. I had somewhat of a smile, although of course there's sadness with that as well, when he talked about the fact that what we call in the news business, it didn't have an obvious news peg, when last year, so in 2014, they did an edition on the steel industry and globalization. Well, funny that, except it's not funny, it's rather sad, because only in the last few weeks we've had this announcement, repeated announcements here in the United Kingdom, of repeated people losing their jobs and the whole steel industry being threatened. And of course, this was particularly pertinent when we had the Chinese president. Obviously, I was covering that very interesting visit and all these trade deals. But the accusation is that China is dumping steel,
absolutely,
which is costing jobs in the UK and elsewhere. Cheap steel on the globalised market.
Benedict Pavio is my guest today. We're going away for a very short break. You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24. Stay with us.
How do you write a biography? Are we all curators today? Who still makes fanzines? And how close are fact and fiction? These are some of the questions constantly puzzling us here at Monocle. So each week on our culture show, we spin the globe to find the very best writers, musicians, artists, gallerists, filmmakers, commentators, and even mudlarks to debunk these cultural mysteries. Tune in to Culture with me, Robert Bound, every Monday at 1900 UK time, where all will be revealed.
And you're back with The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brulé, and Benedict Pavio of the network France 24, France 24. You've brought in some of your own titles. You've been raiding either the newsroom the newsstand, the French part of the newsstand, maybe here in London. Maybe they get couriered over from HQ in Paris. Where do you want to start? I see that you've got L'Obs there, but I'm not sure if that's where we're going to start.
Yes, let's have a quick look at L'Obs. And it's an interesting article, investigation indeed, by L'Obs about chauffeurs, cars, the top politicians and top senior civil servants in France. There are 65,000, yes, I did say 65,000 cars that are called, in France there's voiture de fonction. It's a car that comes with a job, in a sense, and voiture de service. But what L'Obs has really been digging down into, they sent some 1,500 emails. They also saw that they got the law of omerta, of silence, from a lot of ministries, including the office of the French Prime Minister. But they managed to dig out all kinds of interesting bits of information. So it's page 34, it starts on this investigation, and there are at least 600 chauffeurs. Now, what's interesting is that although a lot of people in lots of different countries, a top elite has certain privileges, and France is often thought of in this way, there is actually a growing disquiet, because as the economy doesn't do so well, as the president is not so popular,
as the city grinds to a halt, talking about the capital.
Absolutely, the traffic.
Because they have to say, they do love a motorcade in Paris.
Yes.
They love an outrider. They love a blue flashing light.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Pomp and circumstance, very important. And you see this whole ballet of Citroëns and Renaults and Peugeots and other French cars, all more glamorous one than the other. But actually, the French public is getting quite fed up with that and very much registering the fact that there is a real gap between ordinary people and other people who are abusing the privileges that come with the job.
So is it same? Because I think, you know, there is a role of statesmanship here. So I'm just wondering how balanced is this article, because I don't want to see my president or my defense minister or my secretary of state rocking up in a Mitsubishi Uber. There needs to be some presence. So are they sort of saying you've already cited the numbers, just the scale of the bureaucracy. So it's perhaps five rungs down who still gets a driver hot and cold running staff and all of those things.
Precisely.
Right.
Tyler, that is the problem. And people who are secretly abusing the system, mayors of MPs, senators of outside Paris, who then have their, take the train with others, other people, and then have their driver go from that city and meet them in Paris.
Right.
When they could perfectly be well taking a taxi in Paris. So it's the abuse. But the article is very fair because obviously it recognises the fact that indeed there is a whole security implication. So it's not asking the Prime Minister, the President, worry not, Tyler, or anybody like that to take any kind of risks.
Interesting. Are we going to stay on that, Tyler? We'll probably do two snappy ones
before
we go.
Well, I think a really interesting one is Le Point. We were referring to various things, and maybe next week, yes, German magazines will title on the death of the very important and influential German former Chancellor Helmut Schmidt. But here, Le Point, interesting that they are actually saying, que peut-on encore manger? What can you still eat? Because there is great confusion, says the magazine on this cover story, because you get all these lobbies. That's what it's actually due to, of these various companies telling you one day, this is bad for you, this is good for you, eat lots of chocolate, eat meat, don't eat meat. Mm. But since the World Health Organization last week talked about the dangers of meat, again, I mean, basically the article's saying, you know, eat
don't
in moderation.
Don't give up your charcuterie.
Well, yes, it's saying you can eat it in moderation.
Right.
Don't eat more than 500 grams of meat, red meat, a week. But it talks about what is right and what is wrong. So, for example, people who are told to only have three meals a day, that's actually wrong. There's nothing wrong. And it's quite good to have at tea time something that's, you know, almonds and proteins. And interestingly, and really only the French, wine, what science says about it. And again, and rather...
No lobbies there in France, of course.
No, of course not.
No.
And no prejudice there. But unfortunately, nature is not very fair. Women can have two glasses of wine per day, and that's healthy.
And I can have two bottles.
Men can have four glasses. You've just been told.
But it's, you know, and it's... what, and I think it's always great as well. I mean, all over, you know, the developed world, you hear, oh, you know, women, you know, of course, women during pregnancy cannot drink. And yet, you know, Belgians, French... people in Luxembourg, no problem. I mean, have your glass of red. I mean, is still something that you still hear from doctors.
By the way, no time to talk, unfortunately, about this fascination of the French with James Bond, of course, as the film comes out. And this fantastic article, many pages devoted to the various James Bonds. And of course, we've had Sean Connery, George Lazenby, Roger Moore, Timothy Dalton, Pierce Brosnan, Daniel Craig. And very much such a fascination with James Bond. So that article I recommend is in L'Obs. The French have just broken all records for seeing the film since it's come out of James Bond. So there is a fascination with this suave Englishman who is supposed to be a secret agent, not so secret, but very glamorized, and who has evolved through the different, paid an awful lot of money, by the way, and a great ad for the United Kingdom.
Great ad. And also, I say, quite a good ad for Austria as well. A lot of Tyrol in there, it seemed, too. So much of that sort of film seemed to have Austria taking center stage.
And usually for diamonds and beautiful clothes and lots of drinking.
Yeah,
lots of boats.
Yeah, lots
chasing,
of boats, cars,
beautiful
all of that.
Cars, Aston Martins. Have you been stirred, Tyler?
Not today. We're going to have to leave it there.
I'll try better next time.
Yeah, very good. Benny Pavio, my guest today from France 24. Our show today was produced by Ben Ryland. Our researcher, Fernando Augusto Pacheco, and of course, Claire Urban has been ably managing all of the controls. If you have any comments or queries, then drop us a note to info@monocle.com. Remember, we're back at the same time next Saturday, and you can always listen again here on monocle.com or via iTunes or SoundCloud. This is The Stack. I'm Tyler Brulé. Have a great weekend.